Next item.
1112, amend the Portland Enterprise Zone policy and authorize the submittal of a boundary change request to the state of Oregon to amend and realign the Portland and East Portland Enterprise Zone boundaries.
Colleagues, the E-Zone program has been one of the city's most powerful tools to spur capital investment by companies while leveraging opportunities for employment and skills training for local residents and communities. It advances many of our city's objectives, including emphasis on traded sector jobs, maximizing our competitiveness, creating prosperity for all in our community. The values Portland holds as a city gives some context to this proposal. Our planning and smart development demonstrate that we care about how our city is being built and that value is shared by our local companies and those whose companies want to locate or expand in our area. The new workforce is demanding that companies act differently. It's no longer acceptable simply to come into our community to earn a profit. The benefits to the community must be broader. Prosper Portland, the City of Portland, and others want to ensure that the equitable economy benefits both businesses and the community at large. Public benefits have been built into this E-Zone program, and you're going to hear about that. And the proposed policy change marks a very specific action to begin to institutionalize those public benefits. We have many companies here who want to and are already doing good work in the community. Let's be clear about that. This policy change brings that good work into the spotlight to more fully serve our community. We're all in this together. Businesses involved in the program can and will be celebrated for their active engagement and participation in this shift towards greater partnership and stronger relationships to grow an equitable economy. Gentlemen, I'll let you take it from here. Andy, I don't know if you're starting or...
I'll go ahead and start.
My
name is Bobby Lee. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Bobby Lee. I'm the Director of Economic Development for Prosper Portland. Thanks for allowing us to speak. Next to me is Andy Reed. He's the point person on the Enterprise Zone program at Prosper Portland. We know that you're behind on your schedule, so we're going to condense our presentation in hopes that you can catch up. We also have a couple speakers here today who's been waiting.
I think this is a very important program, so I would encourage you to
explain,
because I'd like people at home to understand it.
Great. No, absolutely. The goal of the Enterprise Zone program, and this program has been around with the state of Oregon for a while, so most municipalities have this program. The difference today is we're wanting to modernize this program and address our growing concern, and that's the growing economic inequity. So the goal of the program is to increase economic opportunity and income for all Portland residents and historically disadvantaged Portlanders by linking them with quality jobs created by participating program Portland E-Zone businesses. And the word E-Zone is a short term for Enterprise Zone. We have two recommendations today. It's going to change in our policy and also amending the Enterprise Zone boundaries. And so that's what we're presenting here today. If I can get to the next screen. Okay, so you'll see on the map where the Enterprise Zone program boundaries are. It's a 5-year tax abatement. It's a property tax abatement only on new capital investment. That includes its existing land, buildings, and personal property on the tax rolls. In exchange for the property tax savings, the company is then required to comply with a number of requirements under the state statute and local city law, which we'll talk about more in detail. The next part of this is you can see the amount of investment by existing businesses that are currently in the program. And if you look at, and we broke it down to different industries, and so if you, in totality, is around $1 billion of new investment to Portland. So the type of investments, however, are dictated by state statute. Retail, housing, and general commercial businesses cannot use the program. These are really focused on traded sector companies. You'll notice from the slide that manufacturing is still our biggest user in terms of investment amounts and number of projects. The jobs are located throughout the city. It has to be within the Enterprise Zone, but they are throughout the city, from northwest to the border of Gresham in East Portland. With that, I'll turn it over to Andy.
Hi, my name's Andy Reed from Prosper Portland. Thank you, Bobby, and thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for your time. So back to the first thing that Bobby brought up, the goal is to increase economic opportunity for all and income for all Portland residents and historically disadvantaged Portlanders. And that's really one of the things that comes out in this local policy. Companies are required to do a number of things locally in addition to the state statute requirements. And one of the things that they do is they pay a portion of their tax savings into a fund. And this is a chart that you see of how those dollars are being allocated. So we have the direct benefits that are coming out in terms of jobs and investment and so on. But the other kinds of things where we can start aligning our dollars and our services together to do really unique and creative kinds of programs that otherwise may not have the funding available. So you see, these are the four kinds of things that we're using it for right now. We fund a la carte services such as credit repair and legal services. We're doing inclusive entrepreneurship work, workforce training through our partnership with Work Systems, Inc. for incumbent worker training. An example could be Bridgetown Natural Foods is now doing on-site ESL classes for their employees through this program. So some really good stuff coming out of that. In terms of kind of where the program's at today, there are about 4,000 current jobs in E-Zone companies in the Portland Enterprise Zones. 2,000 of them are new. Companies have invested a significant amount in the last couple years. The wages are stellar. Where if you split out the $39 an hour, we're looking at about $28 an hour average wages with $11 an hour of benefits on top of that. So when we talk about middle-wage jobs in the manufacturing sector, as we've seen declines in that industry in terms of job growth, E-Zone is one of those programs that is helping to grow the jobs that otherwise are shrinking across the board. The other thing that's happened over time is as we've amended our policy, and this process of coming back today is another iteration of that. We've seen other public benefits start getting infused into the program. For example, Daimler has set up a really amazing transit support network with about 7 different ways that their employees can access transit benefits for to get to and from Swan Island. Jaguar Land Rover has set up a tech incubator. Salt and Straw is double down on diversity hiring. You'll hear more about that today from Kim. On the kinds of things that they're doing as part of the E-Zone program. And Instrument Marketing has childcare incentives for their employees, again, as part of what the E-Zone program did in the 2015 policy amendments. So we're starting to move in this direction over the last few years, and that's really where we're trying to go with this next, is making some policy changes to more directly infuse public benefits into the program. So the policy changes specifically that we're looking at in our current E-Zone policy is, one, moving from a minimum wage for 85% of employees. Currently, only 85% of the employees have to earn 150% of Oregon minimum wage, and that's $16.88 an hour. And our hope is to shift to $15 an hour for all employees, and that's for the janitors up through everybody else in a company that's enrolled in the program. If that is not tenable for some of the companies we work with, such as a food manufacturer, that typically those wages, it's going to be hard to get to $15 an hour for all companies at that level, we've come up with a strategy to say if the company is paying $14 an hour, then we need to see them pay $6 an hour in additional benefits for the employee. And doing our analysis of that, we've seen that there are a number of companies that would not have been able to access the program. These are the kinds of companies that have those entry-level jobs for the immigrant refugee communities, for example, in East Portland, where if we had a standard at the $16.88, we were concerned that those kind of middle-wage job kind of creators would have a hard time using the program in the near future. The procurement plan, we're shifting to ask companies to not only buy locally. They've spent $92 million in the city in 2015. We now want to know who they're buying from. We want to encourage them to purchase from communities that are wanting to see more income come into their communities. In East Portland, for example, within communities of color. So that's the shift there. We're looking to create an option for us that if a company is not in compliance with one of the 7 or 10 things that are involved in our policy, that we have an ability to do a corrective action instead of an all-or-none program, which is what it is right now. Workforce training, this is more kind of a technical thing. We're seeing a lot of alignment between economic development and workforce development. And so we currently have a policy that splits the funds out of the Workforce Training Business Development Fund into two different sub-funds. And we'd like to remove that split as we're seeing, again, this kind of crossover between these two worlds that will create some additional flexibility for us and our partners. And then finally, really kind of the bread and butter of what we're trying to do today is really bring in public benefit agreements into the heart of the program, whereas every company that would be using the program would be doing additional things that go above and beyond the state law and our local policy, and really kind of looking at it from a jobs, prosperity, neighborhood partnership model where we have companies bring to us and we bring to them, this is what the community wants to see, and they say this is what we have in terms of our assets and what we're good at, and find ways to start aligning those things together. So this is what we're looking at for our boundary amendment, which is connected to this request here, and that is bringing in the Central East Side and Old Town Chinatown into the enterprise zones, and also realigning, you'll see up there in the Columbia Corridor area, shifting some of the land from the Portland E-Zone to the East Portland E-Zone. The zones were designated in 2008 and 2012. The 2008 zone, the Portland E-Zone, that will be up for renewal in 2 years. So anything that we're doing today or anything that we do in the near future, that's all up for reassessment in a couple years, and council will need to decide if that's something that we want to continue.
I can't read the small print, so what's the proposed and what's the existing?
So the current proposed Portland E-Zone decreases from 11.8 acres to 10.47 acres, and the East Portland increases from 8.27 acres to 10.96 acres.
And what's the difference between the two colors on this?
They're just two different designations under the state law. You can't have more than 12 square miles in an enterprise zone, and so we have two separate zones to cover the two areas of the city.
So, Bobby, I'll beat the mayor to the punch. When we have a slide like this and a key, can we make sure that it's legible?
Legible.
Because no one at home, if I can't read it, no one at home can read it.
So we'll do that. Thank you.
We've engaged in significant community participation and feedback through this process. For the last 6 months, we've been spending time with our partners in the community to talk about this. Here's a list of the different organizations that we've had meetings, for example, with the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity. They're doing really good work around community benefit agreements and things with the city. And so we've leaned on them to give us some advice about, is this the right direction? The Central East Side Industrial Council is strongly supportive of this. The Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group and the number of nonprofits and community leaders involved in that. We got to a point where we were able to get full support from them as well, based on the things that we were presenting to them. And this is really what they came back to us with. They wanted to see some strong oversight, that if we're looking to do more work around equity and inclusive entrepreneurship, things like that, that we have an oversight committee that helps us to make those decisions over time. And that there's strong alignment with the schools and with WorkSource Oregon, making sure that we're not doing things on our own, but that we bring those partners into the conversations. And finally, really looking at the East Portland investments. How can we encourage growth of business in East Portland using the incentive and using the things that come out of the E-Zone to make that more tenable for businesses as they're looking to site their businesses in the city? And in terms of equity impact, really kind of we're looking at three levels here. We're starting with the policy where we look at jobs, look at creating economic opportunity for all Portlanders, using career ladder strategies and procurement, leaning on our community to do community-based economic development to inform this process with us, and having our newly raised Council for Racial and Economic Equity to join in that conversation with us. And then finally, making sure that our partners are aligned. This is something that we're starting to do a lot more of, is act as a convener and bringing partners together around economic development issues. And really now we're adding public benefits on top of all of that and making sure that as we see corporate social responsibility start to take hold in our community and community have interests and needs that align with what businesses are trying to do, we're excited to be in that place of bringing those worlds together. And so we'd be glad to take questions. We also have a panel that is ready to go, if that would be doable. We'll start with them, as you will.
Great. We have a great panel. Bring them on up.
Thank you for your patience with us today. Thanks for hanging around.
And folks, we have Kim Mellick, the founder of Salt and Straw, with us today. Oscar Aranha, director of community development for NEA. And, of course, Jenny Glass, who's the ED of the Rosewood Initiative. I don't know if you have a particular order.
I wanted to say something to our friend from Salt and Straw. 20-something years ago, when I lived in New York City on 14th Street, right off of University Place, there was a local guy, restaurateur, who needed to get a liquor license for expanding his business. And he had to come to the neighborhood community board. And in New York City, the community board has the first say. And that's where I first met Danny Meyer, because he wanted a liquor license for his business. And later went on to become Danny Meyer. And then we read with some pride that armed with all the money he's made off of Shake Shack, he's now poised to help you go national. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's quite an honor. It's one of my heroes. In no small part, he's one of my heroes because I think he's doing a lot to change what it means to have a job in the hospitality industry in the United States. And fighting for great pay, for career opportunities, and to just have that respect that career deserves. And so one of the things I've learned from him over the past years is really central to how we've developed our business model, and that's putting employees at the center of your business model, next your customers, next the people who you're partnering with to make your products, and then finally at the very end of the line, the investors. And he knows that and is supportive of that. And, you know, I guess I share that because we talk a lot at our company about a saying, all ships rise. We're not going to do well if our entire community isn't doing well with us. And central to that is our employees. We're lucky enough to be part of this E-Zone, and I thank you for that. You know, I told a story when I was here before that back in the day when it was the PDC, we were $40,000 short to open our first store, and we got a loan from the PDC. My partner, Mike, had to put his house up for collateral. I paid that off. And so we've had this ongoing relationship where the city has been very supportive of our company, and we appreciate that. You know, what this means for us, we made a lot of commitments when we signed up for this, and we don't consider this a thing where we're going through and checking boxes. This is our principles, and we appreciate the support and visibility of our community in bringing these to life. And a couple examples, you know, that we wanted to focus on this workforce development today. We think that we provide a really good basis for that because we do pay a nice living wage with tremendous opportunities for growth. We offer a very robust benefits program, including health insurance for part-time employees. They pay $35 a paycheck, and we cover the rest. We offer 3 months paid maternity and paternity leave. We offer employee assistance programs. The list goes on and on. We've been told it's about double what most benefit packages are for companies our size. And then lastly, we offer a pretty important training program, both for our employees who join our frontline, as well as a new career ladder and manager and training program that we just introduced that is a 3-month program to give people who work for Salt and Straw currently a way forward to become a manager if they don't have that experience. So we're really proud of that. I guess, you know, what I would like to focus on are the partnerships that we've already initiated coming out of this this agreement. We're partnering with Gateway to College. Casey Milligan, who is our first store manager, is now on their advisory council, and they're working to develop training programs to help students who are wanting to get their first job, a training program so they can go out and find their first job, hopefully with Salt and Straw, but it could be anywhere in the community. We've hired our first person who has come out of the federal penal system, and we're piloting that to make sure that we're good and can create the right support system to make them successful. We think we're in a unique position for people who are getting their first job, who are trying to reenter the workforce, to support them and make sure they're successful and have have hopefully a long career forward. We're working with an organization actually in San Francisco that we're going to take the learnings from and bring back to Portland called La Cochina. They incubate primarily immigrant women who want to start a business and help them get that business off the ground. So we're working very closely with several of the women who are in that program to sell their products, buy their products, and include them in our ice cream and help them with their businesses. And then just one last example, we're about to open our second store in San Francisco, which we're very excited about. We've been working with the Success Center there to hire primarily people who live in that neighborhood, which you may or may not know is really hard in San Francisco, and give them the training and job opportunities that they need to be employed. So we're bringing those learnings back to Portland as well as we open our new kitchen, hopefully next month in November, which is what this agreement was for. So those are just a few examples that we've been working on. I guess what I'd like to say is, you know, we think that this is the right thing to do. This is how we want to be as a company. But I also want to emphasize that this is good for business, too. I mean, this is a sustainable way for businesses to help create an economy that's good for our community. I don't think you can be a successful business if you're not part of a successful community. The two go hand in hand. And we need to be at the table with you helping to create those solutions. So I appreciate this opportunity.
Great. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Oscar Arana, and I'm the Director of Community Development at the Native American Youth and Family Center. The NAYF Family Center was founded by the community for the community. We work closely with our clients to deliver culturally specific services that guide them in the direction of personal success through cultural empowerment. Our continuum of lifetime services creates a holistic environment that is youth-centered, family-driven, and elder-guided. NAYF's microenterprise program builds economic resilience by developing entrepreneurship within Portland's Native community. We provide free business training, one-on-one coaching, and work to connect business owners with the resources and programs they need to sustain and grow their business. Our program includes an 8-week entrepreneurship class, which uses storytelling to guide entrepreneurs along their small business path. During these classes, we bring in experts on a wide range of topics from how to get a loan to what ownership structure best fits their needs. Clients graduate from class with a written business and marketing plan, as well as one-on-one coaching. Our staff provides monthly check-ins, review business plans, help resource new capital, ramp up marketing efforts, and more. Our next class starts October 19th, and we already have 20 clients registered. Supporting and developing accessible vending opportunities is also a top priority, as it's a critical source of income. A longstanding vending opportunity is the annual NAYA Powwow. This year, more than our 20 vendors earned over $1,000 that day, which is the most she has ever made at any vending event. We organize 3 vendor opportunities at NAYA and plan to bring one of them outside of NAYA in 2018. Financial support from the E-Zone Business Development and Workforce Training Fund has allowed us to enhance our existing infrastructure and reach more clients. We have matched the E-Zone funds with our own philanthropic support to hire a business innovation coordinator this year. This new position is focused on developing key partnerships to support clients who are ready to grow their business. One of our new partnerships is with the Oregon Native American Chamber. ONAC's business network complements our microenterprise coaching, allowing our clients to connect with longstanding Native-owned businesses. Both organizations are part of Prosper Portland's Inclusive Business Resource Network, a coalition of partners focused on supporting entrepreneurs. This network gives us better access and visibility to other providers. One of our clients has already benefited from this network. She used ONAC's intake services, received a Prosper Portland scholarship to attend the Thai XL Bootcamp, and is now enrolled in our microenterprise program, where we will help further refine her business plan. So we support this action as it will create new partnerships between business and community that will enhance economic development in Portland's Native American community. Thank you.
Thank you, Oscar. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Jenny Glass, the Executive Director of the Rosewood Initiative. So we're a nonprofit based in East Portland on the border of Portland and Gresham. We're grateful to be supported by the City of Portland in many ways through the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative with Prosper Portland, through the Parks Bureau, through our partnership with Portland Police and many of the other bureaus. In many ways, our organization serves as a liaison between our diverse community and the city and other government and public sectors. For too long, Rosewood and East Portland have been neglected, but I think that we're making progress. With your leadership and the leadership of dedicated city staff like Bobby and Andy from Prosper Portland, our mission is really simple in Rosewood. We want to improve the quality of life for the people that live there. We want to bring prosperity to our residents that are struggling. And even though that mission is simple, the path to get there is super complex. We need many different creative tools and initiatives to be able to bring prosperity to our community. With the proposed change to the E-Zone policy, underinvested neighborhoods like Rosewood will have an institutionalized process to work with the city and with the businesses that are locating in our communities. We know our neighborhoods and what we need, which is why we're working closely with Prosper Portland to develop these tools that will give us real voice in community-driven economic development. The new E-Zone policy will give us a seat at the table to negotiate community benefits with businesses that are receiving incentives. We can make sure they're paying well, they're hiring our community members, and they're even investing in a transit system that will ensure our residents will be able to get to work. Employers will benefit from this too as they come to see our communities as an asset to their business and a partner in their success. We're hopeful that this tool will have a positive impact in Rosewood and that it will start a trend for our friends in East County, like Gresham and Troutdale, as more and more companies begin to locate in East County. Prosper Portland is a great supporter and ally of Rosewood, even when we're pushing boundaries of what they've considered traditional economic development. The policy changes presented today, I think, are an example of that shift in direction that Prosper Portland's taking to empower communities like Rosewood. We support this action, and we're looking forward to using the E-Zone agreements to benefit Rosewood and East Portland. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Very good. So you can cool your heels. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. How many people do we have signed up?
Two.
Okay, why don't you call them up why don't you call them up?
I believe the first name is Ken, was it? I'm sorry, Mulday, and Ranfis Giamblato Valhallen.
All right, well, while they're deciding whether that was actually their names or not, I just want to acknowledge President Mitsui from Portland Community College. Thank you for being here, and we're going to move your item next right after this. So thank you very much, Mr. President, for your patience today. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ranfis Giannettino Viatoro, and I'm here to testify, I think, in general, in support of the E-Zones and public benefit agreements. If anything, I have a few questions as well as some things to sort of champion in addition to the policy. I recommend a good oversight committee. I think strongly encourage the recommendation on that. I know I've discussed with several of your offices in terms of wage theft in the construction field, but I think labor compliance is a really important component. I think I want to echo the statements from the owner from Salt and Straw that when all ships rise, you know, our communities benefit. And I think one of the things that I think with a lot of mission-driven businesses is, you know, we should definitely have a value on verifying that, ensuring that our dollars are being spent the best way possible, and ensuring that the pay and the salary that's being promised is being verified, that we're verifying that the workers are being paid that those wages. So ensuring that there's some form of a labor compliance component. I don't think this is an issue with any of the manufacturers here present, but construction and manufacturing tops the list in terms of wage theft violations, typically around overtime violations. But I think, you know, the city could do, build in place to ensure that, you know, workers are being paid fairly and laws are being complied. And it could be done in a very low-cost manner that's no burden to any of these companies. And I'd be happy to discuss how that could work. But I think ultimately, I just want to testify in that. Some questions that I have is, you know, whether the public benefit agreements, whether that language would be bound to, say, work that's contracted out by said company or said business. So if, you know, they contract with a janitorial service, whether that service is bounded by the public benefits agreement. So, you know, I heard if janitorial service workers are paid a certain wage, if it's hired directly from, say, a said company, would the case still be made for contracted out work? So hopefully that's something that's definitely in consideration. And I think, again, strongly recommend a good oversight committee. Ensure that there's a seat for community stakeholders to be on that committee. And again, I hope that there is at least some level of labor compliance. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony.
Yes. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. One of the concerns I always had about PDC, and again, as I know it's Prosper Portland at this time, is when we're discussing, which I do agree with this, and I do agree with the changes being made, one of the concerns I do have by reading this map, I sure do hope that the United States Post Office is within this zone. And again, my main focus right now is what we're going to do with Amazon. And I want to make sure Prosper Portland provides everything they can. And if we're going to ever enter into these type of public benefit agreements, my main focus is that I think that we need to have the city auditor be able to audit these agreements. I want to know if the public act, the public themselves have access to these type agreements. If not, why not? I want to review every agreement that takes place within Prosper Portland and understand what's in these agreements. Do I have a right to do that? Do I have a right to ask the auditors to do a full audit on everything on these agreements? At this point, it's my understanding they have an exemption from being able to do that. That needs to be looked at very close. I want to understand what's in a target agreement. I want to understand what's in various other type agreements. Again, my main focus today is to make sure the city of Portland works very aggressively on bringing Amazon into the Portland market. And I want to make sure that Prosper Portland has everything laid out properly in the benefits to the company such as Amazon. And the main thing from my position on these enterprise zones, and I understand you go out 5 years on the tax rebates, I think that is fine. But my understanding, there is no limit on the dollar amount, if I'm correct on this. Maybe I'm incorrect. So I'd like to maybe have an understanding of that. And when you said that there was a some type of requirement on the total square miles, and you referred to the Portland Enterprise Zone, it's somewhere around the 10 square miles, and the East Portland Enterprise Zone around the 11 square miles. So I understand you can just have the total amount up to 20 square miles, if I'm correct, and that's fitting within the requirements for this type of a zone. And I'll research that to understand that, because I was a little unclear. But again, I think this is a, absolutely, I do agree with this. I have a little concerns up by north on Marine Drive on where some of these zones are. I'm more familiar with the marinas up there, a lot of the owners up there. So I just want to see them also receive the benefits in the E zone on their marinas out on the water on the submersible land leases. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you both of you for your testimony. Further discussion? Commissioner Saltzman?
Question. I just had a question. I just want to follow up on the testimony about whether subcontractors are included in enterprise by extension.
Under state statute, no, they're not included. There's a very strict definition of what an employee is or is not. 32 hours a week, full-time employed by the business. Hmm. And so under these public benefit agreement models, this is an opening for us to start looking at things like this, to consider what are different ways that we can lean on businesses, and they can tell us what is good for them, too, as we're starting to work together and collaborate on these kinds of things.
Okay. And my other question was the Council on Racial and Economic Equality. I guess I've never heard of that before. What?
It's a brand new committee that was established at the Prosper Portland.
All right, so this is replacing
it's a
Prosper
Portland committee then?
It is. It is community-based, and so it's a new entity to help us make sure we're hitting our equity goals.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions? Please call the roll, Carla.
Fritz.
This is a fabulous program. Thank you for your work on it, and thanks to everybody who testified. Aye.
Thank you.
Fish.
Yeah, thank you, Bobby, and team, and testimony, and please support it. Aye.
Saltzman.
These amendments and boundary extensions just make the Enterprise program, more in tune with what Portlanders want these days in terms of social responsibility by our companies who are benefiting from these agreements. So great work. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you.